Welcome to RFN episode 282. That is 200 episodes on from episode 82, the beginning of RFN season 2, which marked the first time that the current regular cast was brought together for an episode. But if you're hearing my voice, Greg's, you've already guessed that one of our number is missing tonight, and that is Johnny. He is currently on business travel, and there is some possibility perhaps that he will show up later on in the show for the second segment, but we can't be sure yet, so that's a bit of intrigue, bit of tension for later on. But as usual, I am joined by James Jones.
Hi.
And Mr. John Lindemann.
Always a pleasure, Greg.
Mr. John Lindemann.
Yeah, he seems older gentleman, James.
That's true.
Distinguished.
Respect your elders. Remember that one?
That's right.
But we do also have a guest. It's one of those cases where we actually had enough notice to get a guest in time. And it's a friend of the show. You may actually remember, if you're a particularly long-term and astute listener, that during the call-in show, a kind listener phoned in to ask me how long I spent editing the show every week. And someone so immersed in the pains of editing podcasts, for me, makes the ideal guest, because I assume he'll be utterly concise and brisk with what he says. So I'm pleased to introduce, of negativeworld.org, Guillaume Veillette.
Who? Oh, yeah, right. Hi.
So, Guillaume, you've been an RFN listener for how long?
Well, I've never really listened to it. No, wait.
That's fair.
You just want to know how long it takes.
First time listener, first time guest.
No, I've been listening for about 2 years, and I haven't gone back to listen to previous years, but I'm sure...
I think it's best not
that's
to.
That's the best.
Yeah, just avoid 103, that's my advice.
But yeah, no, I've been listening, and last year I decided that it sounded pretty fun to have a podcast about Nintendo, so I decided to copy you guys over at negativeworld.org. I started my own podcast, and it's all a blur, but we've been recording.
That'll happen.
I've been recording fewer episodes. I'd like to think that that was a smart move.
Greg, how do you feel about that? Smart move?
It's smart, has nothing to do with it. never had anything to do with what we do on the show.
Not during recording, not during editing, not in the talkbacks.
But yeah, well, Negative World is mostly a community. It's a forum that was created back when everyone at the Nintendo boards at IGN decided that they were fed up with the site. So we just like took our ball and went home. I don't know, like, if people are interested, they can come over and join the community or not.
I'm very self-confident, but I can say that I've perused Guillaume's work as an editor, of course. I'm always interested to hear the products of a kindred spirit. It's very good stuff, I have to say.
Thank you.
Very impressive.
Yeah, and despite what you hear tonight, it's usually a good show, so please listen.
Lowering expectations, were you?
Oh, lower the bar.
Shots fired!
Romney was always going to win Michigan. I didn't blow it. So, anyway, we have a custom on the show of our guests going first as it relates to new business. But before we actually kick off, I do want to say just a little rundown of the show. So yes, we will be having new business followed by the usual now playing. But in the second segment, we wanted to mark the fact that it just passed in Japan was the first anniversary of the 3DS release. It came out, of course, at the end of February last year. And so we thought we'd use that occasion to have a little look back at the 3DS first year on the market, our experiences with it mostly. So you can look forward to that in the second segment. But for now, let's get underway with Guillaume.
So I've been playing Back to the Future, the game by Telltale Games.
So is this the retail version that came out in North America?
Well, I'm actually one of the suckers who's a PSN Plus subscribers.
Nice.
You and John Lindemann.
Yes, join the revolution, kind of.
You did you did talk about the Simpsons arcade game recently also on your show. I should have already guessed that.
I'm a big consumer of downloadable games on consoles. I'm a WiiWare junkie, and, well, less so today because there's no more WiiWare, but also PSN.
Hey.
But Back to the Future, I'm playing the PSN version, but the game came out on disc recently. I can't speak to the quality of the port. I think it's gotten pretty bad reviews for the performance. Like, it's supposed to get very janky animation and lowered graphical details, even though the game on PSN is looking pretty simple, pretty bare. But it's actually pretty good. Bob Gale, the writer for the first movie, or maybe all of them, is a story consultant. And sometimes that doesn't mean much, like you don't know exactly how much he was consulted. But the story is actually pretty good. Like, I would say a solid fourth chapter almost.
All right, now, did Telltale do that Jurassic Park game?
Yes, they did.
Because their big criticism of that is that it's sort of trivially interactive. So I was wondering, with Back to the Future, you know, is it more what you expect from a Telltale game?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's
this is moderately interactive.
Yeah. No, it's exactly like Sam & Max or Tales of Monkey Island. You have control of Marty. You walk around Hill Valley, and you solve very simple puzzles. And if you can't solve the puzzles, you can simply talk to the characters of Hill Valley, and they'll give you very obvious hints as to what you're supposed to do. I don't know, like, I'm sounding a little bit down on the game. Well, first, like, there are some things that it does very right. I think you've all seen the screenshots or the videos. I really like the cartoony look of the game. I think that the art pretty much nailed it. And especially amazing is the voice actor that they got to play Marty McFly. The kid just sounds exactly like Michael J. Fox did in the movies. And that really gives me hope that at some point Telltale will pursue this and perhaps create a series about Duck Hollywood.
I was thinking where he was going with that. I was like, is it going to be Spin City?
Secret of My Success 2?
Team Wolf, of course. Wolf is ripe for a video game adaptation.
No, it's not.
So it is, as really you'd expect, it's about you play through for the story, but the puzzles are not necessarily adding a lot to the experience.
Yeah, and more than the story, I think you play for the fan service. You could clearly see, before the release of the game, Telltale had a survey that they made their fans fill out, and they had questions like, what does a Back to the Future video game need to have?
Manure. That's easy.
Well,
that's
yeah.
All it needs.
Manure, hoverboards.
Chicken. Got it. So you're yellow, depending on your period.
Not time travel. Does not need that.
Yeah, well, Telltales would almost agree with the no time travel thing.
Yes! I can design video games!
When I played the first episode, like the nostalgia overload was just too great, and I had to go buy the DVD sets, and I think that's probably exactly the plan all along.
Mission accomplished.
But I gotta say, like, the editing, the music editing is especially also impressive. Like, you feel like the music from the movies is right on cue when you're doing your thing, when Marty is, how do you say that, sketching on his hoverboard, you know, during a chase scene, and all of that stuff. So you really feel like you're playing an episode. But yeah, the puzzles are very simple. I don't know exactly what is to blame. I guess maybe, like, there was a desire to make the game very accessible to the general public. And also, there's less patience amongst gamers for hard puzzles that don't really make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's always risky with this sort of game where it's heavily narrative driven, and you know, obviously it's got all these trappings of a very beloved property. It could be a turn off for people if then all of a sudden this very sort of gamey component gets in the way, which, I mean, I guess it also could limit how rewarding it feels or how integrated it feels, but that's a balance that's often difficult to strike in this sort of thing.
Well, and he's got a point, though. I mean, a lot of times in these Telltale games, the puzzles only tangentially make sense. And I defend these games, but a lot of times they're like, all right, really, I just clicked until I found something. This is not that great.
Right. Yeah.
But if you're trying to casually attract fans of the franchise who aren't also fans of adventure games, they might find that to be really disjointed.
Because when you're dealing with a property like Back to the Future, I mean, you hope to be playing with a far bigger demographic than just people that like...
Than people who buy Telltale mm-hmm. games, i.e. me.
Yeah, well, as a lapsed adventure gamer, I find myself not really having any patience for the puzzles, personally.
And listen, you are a person who is on our forums as Pandarius with a Grim Fandango icon.
Yes.
So I know you are familiar with the genre, but you haven't been dealing with it a lot recently. Is this a foray back into the genre?
Right. I guess my history with the genre is mostly LucasArts, and I think the reason why I played those games was less the puzzles than for the humor. And in all of those games, every dialogue option was an excuse to have a joke in there. And recently we've had Tim Schafer and Ron Gilbert discuss making those games, and they've said as much. Like, they saw the dialogue as how can we have as many punchlines as we can for this one setup. But I guess the problem I have with Back to the Future is that it delivers that in a way. Some of the jokes are, you know, can make you chuckle, but most of the dialogue options I won't cycle through because they're obviously just reiterating what you're supposed to be doing there and give you hints. And that's fine, except that, you know, in trying to find that rare, you know, one-liner that's actually going to make me laugh, I have to sit through so many lines of dialogue that are really just...
utilitarian.
Yeah, exactly. Also, like, in addition to that, they've got, like, at any time you can press a button and call up the hint system, which, you know, ultimately, kind of like the Professor Layton games, they nudge you more in the right direction. And ultimately, sure. It will even give you the answer, like, okay, here's what you're supposed to do.
But obviously, with Layton, you pay the currency for that, and you accrue that from poking around the world, you know, finding little hidden coins in all the different rooms and stuff. Is there mm-hmm. a similar kind of cost to getting the hints in this?
Nope, there's no penalty, and you can just skip right to the last hint if that's what you want.
So you can click right through to the end of the game, basically, mm-hmm. if you wanted to.
Yeah, pretty much. But I definitely, you know, if you like the franchise, I would say go for it. You will get the fan service that you're looking for. That's what the game is.
Sure. Well, I think it's. I don't think the disc version for Wii is out yet in Europe. It's a few months away. But would you like to get onto your next item in your business gear?
Sure. I've noticed a distinct lack of Kirby love on your podcast. And I'm pretty upset about that.
It's because Metz hates Kirby.
He had Mass Attack. Well, that, of course, is a somewhat unorthodox Kirby game.
If he were on the show right now, he'd be screaming at the mention.
Yeah, I've played Mass Attack as well, and I really love that game. It's got its problems, but it's also, I don't know, like, I don't know how it managed to keep itself fresh for the whole game like that. But no, Kirby Returns to Dream Land. I've been playing that. I'm a 2D platformer junkie. I can't get enough of them. But Kirby is, perhaps, and this is a bold statement, one of the most challenging 2D platformers that I've played since Ninja Gaiden.
That's before we get
whoa,
into a...
Whoa.
You are throwing down a gauntlet there, sir.
Before we get into a John Slay New Super Mario Brothers Wii is more difficult than Super Calls of Go situation.
I'm going to start throwing things.
There is, I've heard from Guillaume's Negative World podcast, that there is a hard mode in this.
Yeah, there is a hard mode, but mostly I've been... addicted to these challenge rooms that the game has. In these challenge rooms, you're given one power-up, and you're supposed to be fighting enemies and collecting stars and, you know, getting to the end of the stage. There, you've got a timer, so you're being scored on all those things. You can get a bronze, silver, or gold star pretty easily, but there are hidden platinum medals that you can get, and like, you have to be absolutely perfect in execution. And it's the kind of challenge that has you, like, constantly pausing and restarting, because, like, the slightest mistake means, okay, I'm not going to make it.
So how are these challenges integrated into the game, exactly?
They're not. But yeah, like, it's mostly, I guess, for... I don't think that when you complete them, you unlock anything. It's just... you know, for the challenge itself.
Do it for its own sake. But from a game design point of view, do you find that these specific challenges, and in particular doing them kind of perfectly, actually bring things out about using that one power-up in a way that the more kind of aimless, easygoing main game doesn't?
Well, you definitely have to use the right move at the right time. The game is a little bit like Kirby Superstar, where you have multiple moves with every power-up. So you have to learn exactly how to use them and when. And actually, the main game, like the first time that you go through it, it's pretty easy. But there is a hard mode, as you mentioned earlier. And while you perhaps won't need to, you know, exploit the full range of your power-ups, like it will drastically change your experience. Because you don't just get less health to play with. The enemies will sometimes change size. The levels stay the same, but the enemy placement can change, and that can completely throw you off. And also the bosses are significantly tougher. In the main game, on normal mode, you can basically just hurl yourself at them and take the damage like crazy, and you'll still
brute force it.
Yeah, but in hard mode, like, you need to know exactly how Kirby moves. You know, you have to be careful and watch the patterns. And, you know, it's an actual challenge, like an actual video game. I mean, the main complaint that I hear about Kirby is that he's way too overpowered to be in a platformer. You can just fly over pits, and that kind of destroys the whole point of a platformer. But when you try the hard mode, you'll see that, okay, so you can spam your attack, but then Kirby will be unable to move out of the way fast enough to get, you know, out of the way of the boss.
For me, the hard modes that actually offer something significantly different from the original mode is something I really like.
Right.
And as much of a platform fan as I am, I'm not necessarily thrilled about the idea of playing through what a normal Kirby game is like to get to that point.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it would be brief, wouldn't it?
Well, I would say that the main game is definitely, and unfortunately, the weakest part of the package. And I wasn't especially challenged or especially impressed by the levels, especially the early ones. The puzzles that you have to solve are not especially challenging. The objects are not especially well hidden. It was a little bit disappointing. But once you get to the second half of the game, then it becomes suddenly like the stakes are a little bit higher, and you can run the risk of dying. Personally, I would just, like, the game has multiplayer, and I would just like recommend that you play with someone who's not really used to video games. And then once you unlock the hard mode, then you can just go at it. It will present an adequate challenge. And not only that, but, like, you know, I mentioned getting platinums in these challenge rooms. Well, the hard mode also has challenge rooms.
Oh.
Yes. They're going to be the same power-ups, unfortunately. So there's not really anything new. But yeah, you'll be probably pretty depressed at the idea that there's an even harder version of those challenge rooms that's waiting for you.
You have been warned, for those of you out there who think it's just going to be a cakewalk because it's Kirby.
You will suffer.
Well, no, we'll move on now to the next part of new business. It's John. This is a biggie. This is major news.
Yes, yes. If you felt the earth tremble beneath your feet yesterday,
a disturbance in the force, perhaps.
There was a disturbance in the force, so I finally got a Nintendo 3DS.
Keep in mind, this man was the director of a Nintendo site until about a year ago.
He retired from the directorship just so he could not get a 3DS. I think.
Oh,
I
see.
If you look at the
absolutely
timing,
well, you
it
know,
pretty much matches up.
Good things come to those who wait.
Did that.
Yeah, we're going to be getting into that in the second segment, the whole John waiting and us not. And
John literally ruined the
he
segment.
He gets to join in now as well. That's the good news.
Exactly. And the thing is, I would like everybody to know that not only do games go into my backlog, but also purchases go into my backlog as well, in my
that's,
defense.
That's messed up, to be honest.
Yeah, hey, you know, it's a backlog. It's
just
a,
had
it's
a purchase
little
sealed that was waiting to be used.
I still had a sealed copy of my Nintendo 3DS purchase sitting there on the shelf, and I just decided not to open it until yesterday, all right? Okay, does that make you happy?
My brain just turned off.
So what games did you pick up with it?
Well, I decided to, you know,
Rayman 2.
I wanted to, no. What I wanted to do is I wanted to pretty much just get the cream of the crop right off the top. So right off the bat, I got Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7. I also actually went on the eShop and I got Pushmo, but I haven't played Pushmo yet. But yeah, so Super Mario 3D Land, I actually first played this at Walmart, I think. They had a 3DS set up, and you know, it was really, I hadn't played it at all because it wasn't at PAX East when they had the 3DS there.
No.
It had only just been announced, hadn't it, at the preceding GDC, and that boy felt a long way away.
Yeah, so I had never played it, and I, you know, I played it, and you know, it's obviously Walmart, not the ideal place to play the 3DS. That, you know, that apparently they had, like, you know, a pack of dogs had come through and, you know, ravaged
every
it.
Every DS system ever looks like it's been raped by Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, I mean, it was just destroyed. You know, fingerprints all over it. It was just so, you know, but I played it a little bit, and it was pretty cool. So I finally got it, and actually, I must say, I'm really, really liking it so far. I think it's the perfect blend. Like, for me, personally, you know, I've kind of railed on the 3D games a little bit. They're, like, sort of too puzzle-oriented and stuff like that. And for me, it's kind of the perfect blend of the, you know, when I talked about Super Mario 3, one of the things we talked about was how quick it was. You were in, cleared an area really quickly, and then you were out again. And this sort of brings that back while still retaining that 3D kind of puzzly element where, you know, you can climb up to different places and you can see areas that you can't get to. So you have to kind of figure out how to traverse the environment to get up to a certain ledge or down to a certain place, or you have to find a little cave that you can walk through to get to something. So it's really good. I mean, I really like how you can just jump in, play through something and jump right out again. It's really good. I mean, it's perfect for on the go gaming. And, you know, looks really good. I think right now I just beat the first castle, which was kind of a weird level because I expected to actually get into the castle and then fight up at the top. But you actually do the whole thing where you knock the bridge out and, you know, Bowser goes into the drink. I thought that was kind of weird, sort of anticlimactic, because I felt like he was just sort of taunting me, and then he would fight me later, but
it's supposed to be retro, I guess, like the old Mario games, where you did put him into the lava, which I wouldn't call the drink, because it's lava. Although Bowser might drink lava, I don't know.
But yeah, so for me, that was kind of weird, because it's old school, but I didn't expect that. I expected it to be more like the 3D games, where, you know, you go into some arena, and then you fight him in there, and then you move on.
Right.
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting, but I'm looking forward to going through the rest of it. I must say that having gameplay areas extend into the foreground so that you can actually hop off of something and walk towards the camera and have the play field extend was kind of weird to get used to.
It's something that doesn't happen very often in games because the camera is usually really tight to you.
Yeah, it's kind of it. And I think they do some really cool things with heights where you're falling down into something. And there's a lot of times where, you know, well, there's even like sky areas where, you know, you're out on a ledge and you look down and you have to jump down onto some moving ledge far, far below you.
There's quite a lot of vertical stuff, which I think to some extent the stereoscopic component is what convinced them that was a worthwhile idea, that it would seem cooler, you know, if you descend. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes really quite dizzying kind of heights you're descending from. It's something they keep coming back to every so often with the level design.
Yeah, like in one of the first areas where you're hopping on kind of carts with the arrows on them. So you go to one side and it goes forward, you go to the other side, it goes back, and they're on rails and they hop like from rails to rails and they get lifted up by water spouts. There's one part in that area where you fall off of one set of rails onto another set of rails, and then you just go straight down a hill. And when I saw that coming up, I didn't think it would be that impressive, but the speed at which they did it and the rate of your descent, I was like, wow, the 3D effect really came to the forefront for me. I mean, because a lot of the times it's kind of what you would expect, but that kind of rush that I got from it, I was really unexpected and I was really impressed by it.
Very well. Now, John, how have you been getting on with Mario Kart 7? I remember you had Mario Kart Wii back in 08, so how's it been going?
Yeah. It's very, very similar to Mario Kart Wii.
There's no bikes, though.
Still has the blue shell, though. Ah, that blue shell still kicking your ass. That hit me right off the bat. I was like, there it is. I was missing you, blue shell. Screwed me over.
At least the blue shell hurts people behind you now. It may do.
I thought that the controls felt really good, and it seems that the tracks are wide so that it just makes it easy to slide and, you know, do the slide boosts.
Well, yeah, I mean, the tracks, sort of, they're not as wide as Mario Kart Wii because that was for 12 people. And they get narrower. You know, I imagine you've been playing the early cups. So you get to a point where you feel like, yeah, this is probably tighter than anything that was in Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah. I mean, the flying doesn't seem to add very much to the equation.
My favorite part with the flying is that where you get to a point where there's portions of the track you're kind of skipping, and you can find ways to actually skip significantly more of it than you initially thought. So it's like, well, if I kind of descend and flick off a little ramp and then get another little bit of flight going, it can lead some interesting little bits of corner cutting, especially, so for instance, if you've got a power-up like a mushroom or golden mushroom where you can really augment your flying ability, then you can do some crazy stuff. Like the giant corner on the Mushroom Gorge track offers some interesting potential for trying to do a crazy corner cut that can go spectacularly wrong, but also I'm going to crash into the wall, but if I crash into the wall just over the finish line, that's fine.
Yeah, I got to say, though, you can't beat, jumping off a ramp and then getting hit with the blue shell while you're in midair. So not only do you get screwed by the blue shell, but you also fall into a chasm.
What you need to do in that is, if you know it's coming, just stop before the chasm. I mean, sometimes you can't necessarily be able to predict that. But the worst is the lightning for that. You don't know.
Yep.
At least with the blue shell, it makes a noise and you can see it on the little map below.
So, yeah, enjoying it. I mean, it's just I'm having as much fun with it as I was with Mario Kart Wii. It's good.
I have to catch you online sometime, John.
I am. I will be online, my man.
All right. Well, we'll move on to James now, who's got something in.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, actually. This is a little bit quicker than I might have thought.
Well, I'll start with a 3DS game first, though.
Oh, okay.
I mentioned, I guess it was probably 2 weeks ago now, that I had a relatively large number of games show up in one shot.
Yeah.
And I've started working the pile. So I went ahead and pulled a 3DS game, because I haven't had a proper 3DS cartridge game since 3D Land.
Right.
I just haven't, bought a lot of games, and to be honest, there haven't been a lot of games to buy. I mean, there was Mario Kart 7, but I'm not the huge Mario Kart fan, so I ended up with this game because it seemed like a reasonable deal at the time, Pac-Man and Galaga Dimensions. Essentially, it's a collection of 6 Pac-Man and Galaga games on a cart and a Pac-Man 3D 30th anniversary movie, which we'll speak about in a moment. But it's got original Pac-Man and original Galaga, which no one on Earth needs to play. It's then got Pac-Man Championship Edition, which was originally released as a downloadable game on 360 and the PS3.
Yeah, but it's not the DX version that came out later, so it's the original
Edition. Which, it's still a fun kind of take on the Pac-Man concept. It's really colorful, lots of bright glowy lights. It does have some 3D effect involved, although not much. But it's more that as you collect pellets, more pellets show up on the screen. It's more a survival mode than just clear the stage kind of thing.
Right, like the first Pac-Man CE is basically more of a take on Pac-Man, I would say, and the second one is kind of like snakes.
The conga line thing and all that, yeah, it does kind of branch off a bit. So still, that sounds pretty cool. Then is it, they got Galaga Legions.
Yes, they also have Galaga Legions, which is actually a really interesting shooting game.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Vertical shooter, tons of enemies on screen for the 3DS. Very nice use of 3D graphics, considering it's a 2D game. It's got the shoot one up kind of stuff where you can collect enemies around you using the Galaga, which I don't even think the Galaga was a thing in original Galaga. It was just a term they used, but apparently they've retroactively created a thing called the Galaga that steals enemy units that fly behind you and shoot as part of your beam of death. These big formations, the Legions, have individual units that can be hit to cause massive chain reactions of explosions. The game's actually somewhat difficult. I haven't been able to clear the second stage with a lot of lives, which is kind of sad, because I think there's 6 of them.
But I assume it's still got a heavy kind of high score component and all
that. Oh yeah, very, very, very high score driven. In fact, you can jump to whatever stage you want to play to get high scores on it, or you can play in, quote, story mode, which is slapped like this quasi Zone of the Ender story on top of it, where they're just like, we need to go to section 2, and then you start blowing shit up in what area called section 2.
But I don't remember there being any online leaderboards for this.
There are not, no. The game does not appear to have any online functionality of which to speak. The fourth game is another Pac-Man game, which is a 2D side-scrolling game called Pac-Man Tilt.
Yeah, so is this the one that do they switch the 3D off and then you do it all with the gyro? Yeah.
How I described this game was it's kind of like an early DS game in which there was a piece of functionality in the system that they felt they really had to use. In this case, they really needed to use the 3DS's tilt sensor. So how the game works is, it's like I said, it's a 2D platformer. You control the 3D Pac-Man, which is really horrifying looking, to be honest, as he walks through these incredibly neon-lit rainbow stages that are actually really attractive and really bright. And you basically jump on swinging platforms, over ledges, over obstacles. You can activate the power pellet to kill ghosts, or you have to avoid them if you don't have any. You collect regular pellets and fruit to get points. But how they work it is, a lot of the gaps are too long for you to jump. So by tilting the screen, you actually affect gravity on the game world.
Right.
So if you tilt the screen hard right, down starts to point towards the right. There's actually a plumb bob in the bottom left-hand corner of the screen telling you where down is, in case you can't tell by looking at where your 3DS is tilted. There's a lot of physics stuff in there. There are platforms you have to swing back and forth to get high enough to jump off of. There are cannons you have to aim. You can get fired out of stationary cannons, and then you use the tilting to kind of affect your angle of flight. If you tilt the screen far enough, he'll start to roll, which is much faster than how he walks, and you can use that to go off ramps. It's actually a decently challenging physics-based platformer.
How you feel like the combination of the gyro control and the game's physics, is it dependable? Is it satisfying in that way?
I would say it's fair. It's still a bit shallow, but I think they said, you know, it's 1/6 of a game. We don't have to be that great about it, but it's actually a reasonably competent game.
All right, now the last of the six, the Galaga 3D thing.
Galaga Impact.
As I recall, was singled out for particular derision.
That is a train wreck. That is monumentally terrible. So Galaga 3D Impact is kind of like cockpit mode Star Fox.
Right.
You're on a rail through the environment, shooting at targets on screen. You aim with a combination of the circle pad and the gyro sensor.
Oh.
So as you turn the gyro sensor, you affect where the ship is pointed, which would be true if it weren't for the fact that the game gets off. And then you use the circle pad to sort of affect where you're looking in reference to that. I oftentimes find myself looking behind me into the back of my ship, which is not particularly helpful. And then having to hit the reset button on the screen to recenter my aim right as I'm about to be crashed into by a really hideous-looking 3D bug. There's a lot of shooting and not a lot of killing. It's just not good. It's just utterly bad. There's so many terrible decisions in terms of control and camera perspective and just getting on target, which is a shame because the 3D effect is actually really good in this game. The HUD overlays nicely and the enemies seem to be coming at you. Now, it looks like you're shooting Lincoln Logs at them instead of laser beams, but besides that, it's a decent looking game. I don't know why they felt they had to squeeze it in here, because it doesn't work. But I do want to speak briefly on the Pac-Man 3D movie.
So, yeah, this is a pattern of Namco putting 3D movies on their game cards, because Tekken, the 3DS game, has that feature-length film on it and stuff.
What the
When do you actually get to see this Pac-Man? Does it illuminate why this business strategy is apparently so attractive to
them? So let me give you the brief rundown of the Pac-Man 30th anniversary special video. Basically, you're a 3D Pac-Man with a red beat with legs and a purple Hot Topic proprietor is sort of what you're greeted with. And then when you start it, it's this futuristic world of Pac-Men and women. Who it starts out discussing in incredibly serious tones how there was apparently a war with things from space, and those are actually the ghosts who have been sealed in hell that you fight during Pac-Man. And yet somehow
would you ever make that story up?
This is like a 3D movie version of the old 8-bit manuals where they explain stuff that didn't need explaining. Like, the blocks in Mario are actually people that are trapped in there, and you're helping them by breaking them apart.
Yeah.
But it gets weirder because when they break out of this cybernetic prison beneath the Earth, it explains that the ghosts want their bodies back, and they proceed to show them taking over people's bodies. At which point, a giant robotic hell demon comes out from behind the ghosts and busts out of a wall, and then an old Pac-Man tells the titular Pac-Man it's his responsibility to eat all of these things. It's monumentally awful. I watched it and didn't say a word. I just giggled the whole time. I mean, it was
so bad.
It's
so bad.
It's, I'm going to show this to people at PAX and go, just watch.
Well, why don't you try and redeem storytelling in games a little bit with just a little wrap up on your new business here?
Sure. So, in my effort to get down my backlog, I decided, well, I should purchase more games. As we've discussed on the show, I had already bought The Last Story before XSEED announced it, and in fact, it shipped the day before they announced that they had it, because I would have cancelled my order otherwise.
You would have had to wait, like, 4 months at a minimum.
Well, I probably wouldn't have cancelled, but at least I could have made an educated decision. And then I would have just sent them, like, $10 and been like, just take my money, please. But instead, I have a game that showed up today, which is very quick turnaround.
Yeah, I'm impressed with that.
So I have The Last Story. I started playing it today, very, very briefly. I just got through the first set of tutorials, which starts with you running in a cave with your comrade running ahead of you, and tiny little monsters that you bludgeon to death with a very dull-looking sword. I mean, really, that's all I've got. Hopefully I'll have more to say about that game next week. I'm excited to play it, yet at the same time terrified of what it's going to do to me, because it is a long game.
Well, it's certainly not as long as Xenoblade by all reports.
Well, that's easy.
That is easy. But I mean, it does say it really depends on how much you want to get into side quests and stuff. But I mean, in terms of what some people I've heard, you know, how long it took for them just to kind of blast through the main thrust of the game, you could probably do it in two sittings, I dare say.
Really?
I'm putting a sitting at like 10 hours, but...
I haven't done one of those since Xenoblade.
That's what I'm talking about. If it were...
Well, look, I had to get to that incredible narrative wrap-up that is Xenoblade.
It is... Is it a wrap-up? I don't even... It's incredible, certainly. I don't think there's any way
there are eight
that.
People listening to the show who know what we're talking about, and they're just going, yes.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt we'll be hearing plenty about that next week. I'm certainly looking forward to that. They got good reviews over here, but, you know, they gave me enough pause to think, I'll wait for James to give me the straight dope.
There we go. Well, I should be pretty deep into it by next week.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to wrap up the business here. First of all, just a bit of world upside down news now. So we have a running joke sort of last week about the way that Europe is getting more and more strictly adherent to NCL with the way it had Nintendo Direct just subtitled without any actual original. Well, now they've started to ape NCL in a different way, but it's kind of more exciting for me anyway. One thing that Japan, they have for the virtual console is they announce all the games that are going to come out for the Wii one anyway before the beginning of that month. And for some reason, after all these years, the European brats just decided to do that too. And throwing
in... That's a good idea.
Decided to throw the eShop ones in as well. And the list is incredibly long, in fact. The total between both the eShop virtual console and the PAL Wii virtual console is no less than 11 games in the month, including 5 for the Wii virtual console, which means, yes, Europe will get more Wii virtual console releases this month than Japan will, which may never have happened before.
Also, more this month than the last 6.
Yeah, considering we're not far removed from, what was it, 30-odd weeks without a single game, and now we get 5 in 1 month? It's utterly bizarre. So just run them down. For the Wii Virtual Console in March, assuming they make good on this stuff, we've got Mega Man X, which is catch-up with the USA and Japan, of course, and Mega Man 5 for the NES, the Super Street Fighter 2 version for Genesis with online play, that's all confirmed. Strider, again, catch up. And Samurai Showdown 4.
Ooh!
So, yes, some of it is playing some really long overdue catch up, in the case of Mega Man X anyway. But I'm glad it's happening.
And those aren't all terrible.
Capcom are obviously a pretty significant contributor in that.
And another SNK fighting game.
Yeah, but I mean, while they have become the bread and butter of Japan's virtual console lineup, they, along with everything else, seemed to dry up quite a while ago everywhere else. So I don't know. I mean, personally, I've always wanted to have Metal Slug 3 on the virtual console because it's meant to be one of the best Metal Slugs.
It is very, very good.
I'd just rather have one than like the collection, which didn't support the classic controller.
Yeah.
For some reason, they just like stopped at 2 and have not put the third one up there. But the third one was on the European schedule for later in the next quarter. So hopefully that'll be coming worldwide at some point. But then you've also got the eShop, the portable virtual console, which includes Metroid for the NES, the Kid Icarus Game Boy game. It's pretty predictable considering it's already out in Japan and that you've got the new one coming out. Dr. Mario for Game Boy, and then the 3 Game Gear games that are sort of launching that part of the virtual console. You've got Dragon Crystal, which I think is a bit of a roguelike. There you go, James. Shinobi and Sonic the Hedgehog Triple Trouble. But that is very impressive to me that they're going big for virtual console. We've always lamented the fact that they only put one thing a week out or, you know, on the eShop even with 6 games to come out during the month. There's going to have to be multiple ones. So that straight away suggests that, you know, that policy is not completely inflexible. And then to have such a massive spike and revival with the Wii one is great. I'll now move on into what I've been playing. Not so much just recently, actually, because I did pick this up a while ago, but I've kind of been chipping away at it for quite a while. It's somewhat appropriate, giving our theme of looking back over the 3DS's year on the market in the second segment, because it's Steel Diver.
Oh, no!
Kind of became a bit of a poster child for everything bad about the 3DS, which is which is a bit unfortunate in some ways, or understandable in others. But you know, I had an eye on it kind of early on, because I cast my mind back to the early period of the DS. You know, it was a time when I was looking for games to pad out my library, and I ended up picking up Yoshi Touch and Go on the cheap, which was regarded as being a sort of fun little use of the DS, but it was completely insubstantial for a retail game. But, you know, I really got into it and ended up playing it easily enough to kind of justify having paid more for it than I did. So I was thinking maybe Steel Diver could be a similar situation. I'll sort of bide my time, see if it could come down in price, and then maybe it'll pull a similar sort of trick. And the thing is, with these sorts of games, I mean, this is technically kind of a time attack game, but, you know, it's kind of a high score situation. It's very feast or famine for me. I'm the kind of guy that if I really get into a high score game, you know, if it was something like a pinball, Pac-Man Championship Edition DX, there's various examples along with Yoshi, you know, I could play it for ages, ideally augmented by online leaderboards to give it some context, but if not, there's still something there for me. But on the other hand, if it doesn't fully click for you, it could be over pretty quickly. So I definitely wasn't willing to pay a lot for Steel Diver. And it took a lot of months for it to get to a point, actually, where it was affordable, despite the fact that I don't think it sold particularly well, in Europe anyway. But I did eventually get the chance to play it, and I have enjoyed it. I do like these sorts of things where you use the touchscreen as a kind of virtual control interface, a little bit like what happened with the Chosoju Mecha MG game I spoke about a couple of years ago by Sandlot with the giant mechs. You know, here you've got you steer with a sort of virtual wheel, and then you've got your descent and your acceleration levers, all that kind of stuff. So I'm quite happy to play that style of game. And then the physics, all that kind of stuff, it has to be very carefully balanced in terms of, you know, this is a submarine, you know, sort of simulator-y kind of thing. So obviously it has to feel like you are almost driving this thing on a lag. It's heavy and it's not very maneuverable and all that. But on the other hand, it's difficult necessarily to make a really fun game out of that if it's too accurate, if you know what I mean. And I think they've pitched it at a pretty good level here. Although you've got 3 different subs, which vary in terms of you've got light, middle, heavyweight. The lightest one being really quite maneuverable. It kind of does a certain amount of steering for you. And then the third one is huge, and you really feel like you have to do a lot of work just to get it to do a routine kind of turn. But at the same time, it is a lot more durable, which comes in handy in some of the later missions. And so once you get to grips with the basic hand handling and all that kind of stuff. What it becomes is almost like the slowest, weirdest racing game you've ever played. Because that is a lot of what you're doing. A lot of it is kind of racing fundamentals. I mean, you know, you're trying to fight a racing line when you're guiding the submarine through. As soon as you come out of one turn, setting yourself up for the next one. But it's all happening really slowly. And yet at the same time, even though you've got ages to react, it can get quite frantic because, you know, obviously this thing isn't going to turn on a dime because of the way the controls work and all that. So it's quite satisfying in that way. It's quite unusual. And the amount of content certainly compares favorably to something like Yoshi Touch and Go. I mean, you've got seven sort of mission levels.
High praise.
Yeah, I know. And then you've got a few time trials, which are completely separate. Like the main levels, you beat them and then record your time at the end. And that's, you know, the high score is how quick you did it. But you've got a whole separate time trial mode, which the background is basically completely generic. Like you're just in this metal tube, but it's just a race to the finish. And they offer a nice little different spin on the gameplay as well. That's not a trivial sort of mode, that time trial mode. But at the same time, the one thing I would criticize it for is not so much not having enough content, or at least, you know, at the price that I bought it, but it's how self-conscious it is about what content it has. Because, for instance, the last two missions, 6 and 7, which are some of the most interesting ones in the game, and it really gets into tight spaces and more challenging and more interesting. You get a big sort of boss fight at the end of the 7th one with this super sub, are locked behind having to complete the first 5 with every sub, with the 3 of them. And it's just on the one hand, I understand that playing with the different subs is a significantly different sort of experience, and it can be challenging in different ways, but the requirement to do all of them just to see those last two, I thought was ridiculous. And only there because they felt like we've got to force people to play it for longer before they think they've finished it. Which, yeah. It's just, especially in a game that really, the real core of it is, you know, that kind of high score style or racing game style, you know, shaving seconds of time, finding better ways to complete the level. That's really where the meat of the game lies, you know, not seeing all the levels. And yet they put all this sort of impediment just before you can see all the levels. I thought that was silly. And then it also has an expert mode, which significantly changes things because it remixes the enemies. It puts quite a lot more obstacles in your way, that sort of thing. But again, that you've got to do everything before you'll see that, which, I mean, that's more understandable, but still. And then there's also this issue with the decals. You've got these the things that you earn at the end of the mission. You beat a mission and then you get that little gyro controlled mini game where you're shooting down enemy ships as if you're looking through the periscope that Miyamoto urged us all to play in a swivel chair, which I've actually done. It doesn't really make it that much more fun. But the point is, you complete that and then you get decals. And these decals have status effects. Like, you can actually, some of them are very useful. Like, they actually increase your descent speed, or they increase your endurance against mines or missiles, all this kind of stuff. It could be really helpful to cutting your time or just being a level. But a lot of them, you know, you've got to get like 10 of them to then apply that effect to your sub. So you're going to play the level God knows how many times to get like random rewards, and then do that enough times that you would get 10 of those things. I mean, it's ridiculous. Again, I mean, they're really just trying to stretch it as much as possible. And that's what bothers me. It's not how much they've got, but how much they try to stretch it. And, you know, those are different effects. I'd like to be able to experiment with them more than I have. But even though I have played the levels quite a lot, probably more than a lot of people would, to be honest, I still haven't got a lot of those decals and been able to play with them. So I think it shows that it's a really awkward fit as a retail game. You know, it supposedly was once considered for DSiWare and whatnot. On that basis, maybe it would have been better keeping it in the digital space, where they could have just been more kind of upfront about these things and not put so many kind of barriers between you.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, the amount that I've used it, I could see, you know, some people might have bought it with the 3DS and got a lot of use out of it, because I think, you know, it is really unique and it is very satisfying when you start to master this particular kind of gameplay. But still, I kind of feel like, you know, it may well have been better suited to a digital platform. It would have been a nice thing maybe to launch the eShop with itself.
Yeah.
And that now is going to wrap me up for new business and the segment as a whole. And so after the break, join us for a look back at the first year of the 3DS.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We begin this week with a review for Pokepark 2 Wonders Beyond by Josh Max. Nintendo's newest game has something for every Poke enthusiast, according to him.
We have impressions for Bravely Default Flying Fairy for the 3DS by Danny Bivens. Square Enix has released the first demo on the eShop in Japan, and you can read about the impressions that are even less consequential than the demo that Nintendo had for the third Golden Sun game at E3 09.
Well, at least this is promised to be part of a series of demos or something.
Nobody knows anything about that game, even after they've released the demo.
It's by the developers of 3D Dot Game Heroes, apparently, Silicon Studio. There you go, there's something.
There's something, yes.
All right, Nate Andrews gives us an extra life column about the game Contact, knocking down the wall of Grasshopper's DSRPG.
That game is so high!
Yeah. Neil Ronahan also gives us a blog about what he played in February 2012. And he says, this is the only list you'll read this month that has Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball on it.
I love that game.
Apparently you haven't read my list, Neil.
I wrote a pilot for a TV series about Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball. I don't want to hear it.
It's worthy of it.
It's the best thing I've ever written.
And finally, we have a feature, the March to E3 2012 February edition by Nate Andrews, which is a roundup of all this past month's Wii U news and rumours ahead of course, its big reveal at E3 coming up in the summer this year. And of course, we have all the latest news, as well as screenshots, videos, and all that good stuff up to check out at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Check it.
Welcome back to the second part of the show, and this is where we're going to talk about the 3DS first birthday. If you've been following the Nintendo scene with any interest at all for the past year, you know the story, obviously. It was seemed like a reasonable launch performance, then it completely cratered.
It was monumental.
We didn't get the eShop until June, and then we had the price cut in August, and it seemed to come back from the dead when the good games started coming out, especially in Japan with its holy trinity of Mario 3D Land, Mario Kart, and Monster Hunter. All of that kind of stuff is well travelled. We're not going to sort of repeat that now, but the way we're going to sort of approach this really is kind of taking stock of what it's been like for us as people who've owned it, apart from John, of course, but he has recently joined the rank, so we'll definitely be talking about the differences in our experiences over the past year that came as a result of that particular fork in the road. But the first thing we're going to do here, I bought it on launch day. James, you were also launch day. Guillaume?
Also on launch day.
We'll now look at the catalogue of games that we've built up. I've asked us all here to compile a complete list comprising the retail games, anything from the eShop, and the virtual console as well. So, first of all, games that we got with it at launch day. Mine was only Pilot Wings. James?
I went crazy. Street Fighter, Pilot Wings, and Ridge Racer.
I got that beat.
Actually, I had a Rayman review copy in hand before I got my 3DS.
All right, well, with my own money, I bought four launch games. Steel Diver, and I almost didn't play it. That's why I didn't even say anything earlier. Rayman 3D.
Oh, you poor, poor man.
Yeah. Well, it's actually my second most played game, launch game.
Oh, no!
Pilot Wings Resort and Ghost Recon.
Oh, right, yeah, the Advance Warsy.
Yeah, and that would be the one that I've played the most out of all the launch games.
Well, it was kind of one of the stars of the show at launch for a lot of people. I think definitely one of the more substantial games, right. No doubt about that. But now I'll go through the rest of my retail games that I picked up over the past year. So after Pilot Wings, it was a couple of months went by with nothing until I got DOA Dimensions. And then another month or so until I got Ocarina of Time 3D. 3 months, I think, virtually between this and Star Fox 64 3D was the next one. And then again, virtually another 3 months till Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7. And then it's kind of got a bit more regular because I got Shinobi that I spoke about on the show for discount, Steel Diver for discount, and then Resident Evil Revelations full price about a month ago. And that completes my set of retail games. So James, after coming out of the gate so strong,
right?
How did it go from there?
After those four, I then proceeded to pick up the Tom Clancy, which I played a bit, but never actually got around to finishing.
Is there a particular reason why it's a strategy game? You are amenable to that sort of game. Is there a particular reason why it didn't sort of get its hooks into you the way that some others do, what it seemed to with other people that played it?
I don't know. It just never quite did it for me. I'm not sure what the reasoning was. I think it might have been that it's a bit XCOM-y, and I was never a huge XCOM guy. I kind of want to have more things going on the field at one time. It felt a little bit slow.
Right, and it's XCOM-y because the guy was actually the creator of XCOM, right?
Something like that, yeah. So, I mean, I bought it because I got a decent deal on it and because, there wasn't anything else out. Then a very long and interminable period passed, and I got Ocarina of Time, Bit Trip Saga soon after, Digital Devil Saga Overclocked, which was, as we know, a review game.
And a DS game.
and a DS game. Pet Zombies, again, a review game. Ace Combat Assault Horizons Legacy, which is too many things, but it's it's actually just Ace Combat 2, followed very closely up by 3D Land, Resident Evil Revelations, and then the game I just talked about, Pac-Man and Galaga.
Yeah, so Revelations, James, have you got into that much?
I haven't. I actually picked it up for someone else and haven't gotten around to playing it all that much. I want to get the Circle Pad Pro because I found playing it with the 3DS in general to be relatively unenjoyable.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I just don't like the control scheme for it. So I just haven't gotten around to getting the Pro yet because I have to go to a GameStop to get one because they're relatively difficult to get here.
Sure, yeah. That was why it was really convenient, that whole bundle deal that they did over here. But you're committed to getting one, though.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's going to get support. It's just at this point, it's just not terribly expensive. And I've played Revelations without it, and I felt the same way about it at E3 as I do now. It's decently good, but it needs help.
I'm pretty sure the CC Pro is difficult to get pretty much anywhere you're at. But you can you can order for, I think it's $20 on Nintendo's website.
Oof, that's more than I was expecting it to be.
And shipping $5.
Oh, that's awful. They should be paying me $10 for the inconvenience.
Yeah, I mean, it's comparable over here if you wanted it separately, like 15 quid. Oh. I'm glad I got it for virtually nothing. I'd find it hard to justify the separate purchase. But Guillaume, will you take us through your retail games?
Well, I went crazy on launch day and got 4 games, but then...
So did you also just bottom out horribly after that?
Well, after I realized, and thank you, Activity Log, after I realized that I played those 4 games for a total of 20 hours, I pretty much didn't buy anything until Mario 3D Land.
Whoa! That is a long time. That's 8 months, people.
Well, in context, I mean, the eShop came out, so I
sure, but that is going to be the... Well, so you got 3D Land. What have you got since that?
So, by itself, I played it for 20 hours, so that was a good investment.
Four games.
And then Mario Kart, 33 hours. That's just crazy. And Shinobi, which... Like the launch games, I didn't touch much.
I like Shinobi. I mean, admittedly, I wasn't totally confident about it. That's why I waited until it got a bit cheaper. But I definitely like it. But it's a very sort of particular kind of game.
Right.
Quite old school. And as I said when I was talking about those really long levels, very weird on a portable game, which led to me not playing it portably at all.
Right. I like the action, but like, did you have the same problems I did? Like, it seems like the danger always comes from off screen. And not just like from enemies that are shooting, you know, throwing stars at you, but also dangers like spikes.
Hazards.
Yeah, hazards that you can't see.
There's parts of it where memorization seems like it's the quickest way to deal with these sorts of things, but that doesn't necessarily fit all that well into a game with really long levels.
Right.
So that's a bit of a shortcoming of it, but certainly I liked it. I mean, in terms of games that I played the most on the retail side, Mario Kart and DOA are the big winners because they had online and local multiplayer.
Right.
That I got to use. So, I mean, Mario Kart I hammered during the Christmas break. Big time. It's actually over 50 hours I've got logged in on that. And same with DOA, although the online was not nearly as good there, so it doesn't come close to the 50 hours quite, but those were the games that really sort of took up my time. And then single player ones, I think it was more than 30 into Ocarina of Time, more than 30 into Star Fox, because I really tried to get those expert mode gold medals, which are very, very hard. I got about 10 of 16. That takes a lot of practice, indeed. And then Super Mario 3D Land, which is my favourite game on the system, but even just going through everything to get the bonus level at the end, which includes some kind of really kind of pointless doubling up, even then it only took about 25 hours. So that's not quite as big as some of those other ones.
If I look at my activity log and sort it by hours used, Netflix actually wins by, 70 hours over the number two game. It's just probably a pretty big indictment of the system, isn't it?
Depends how much you like watching TV shows on that thing.
Number two is Ocarina of Time 3D, which I beat in 18 hours and 20 minutes and only 9 sittings, which is kind of scary. And 8 days, according to this. That's horrifying. 3D lands at basically 16 hours, and then Ace Combat is at 12.
Okay, now before we move into all of our digital collections, since we've been through the retail stuff, I'm pleased to announce that Jonathan Metz has indeed made it in time to participate in this segment. Hello, Dr. Metz.
Hello, everyone. tell me where it hurts.
So, yeah, you've come to a world upside down where Europe is the place to be for virtual console, where John has a 3DS. Restore normalcy by telling us how underwhelming your retail 3DS collection is, please.
It's small. I wouldn't call it underwhelming. My first game was Ridge Racer 3D, which is not a great game. I don't think it's a bad game, actually. I just felt like a racing game I might get a lot out of, and I felt like it was something that they really couldn't screw up. But it's okay. It shows off the 3D really nicely, and it's just not a very deep game, and there's not much variety to it. But it was kind of okay for the time, and it was a good sort of introduction for me. And then I picked up Mario 3D Land, which I have played the most of any of my retail games. I've put in probably like 18 hours into it and probably have a couple more to go.
And now that was a 6-month gap pretty much, right? Because you jumped in on 3DS pre-E3. That was in June.
I did it right about the eShop launch.
And then you're going all the way then to Thanksgiving kind of time for 3D Land. Yeah.
I have high standards, Ridge Racer notwithstanding, and so I have played Mario 3D Land plenty. In fact, I hadn't played it for a couple of months, but I obviously was just on a trip, and on the plane both ways, I played some Mario 3D Land, and I'm actually getting close to having all the gold flags and all the Luigi and Mario status complete for all the levels. So I'm kind of working towards that, And it was a task that I felt was a little mundane at the time, but since I've had some time off from the game, now I don't mind going back through the levels as Luigi or as Mario so much because I don't remember them as keenly as I did when I first got the game. So sure. It's kind of like replay value for me. It feels almost like I'm playing through the game again, but because it's been a while, it's a little bit more fresh. I also have Mario Kart 7, which I have not played all that much, honestly, because I'm not that crazy about it. And the online stuff seems to work well, but I kind of feel like we should have another online Wi-Fi event night because playing with random people is not that great. And usually when I look at the NWR communities, maybe it's just the time of day, but there usually aren't enough people there for me to get a game with them. So, although I will say the last time I tried to play online was a few nights ago, and I got with a group. Maybe this just speaks of who's still playing Mario Kart, but I got with a group, and we played for about 20, 30 minutes, and never was Mako Wuhu ever chosen by anyone in that
group. You lucky man. You lucky man.
I got in with some like real players, like some people who really, you know, are in it to play Mario Kart for real.
Oh, it's tough. I've played it a lot, as I was saying before. You guys, my most played 3DS game, and sometimes it is brutal when that comes up like three times in a row. Oh.
Yeah,
it's I call my name for them is Woohooers. These people that just keep picking it over and over again.
You do realize what I'm going to have to do when I get this game now, right?
Oh, yeah, I know. If you're actually willing to buy the game just for that, you almost deserve commending for being that committed to spite.
I have actually played that course, actually, online. That's the one where you do a lot of flying, right?
Yes, and that's the sad thing, is it would probably be one of my favorite tracks if it weren't so easily exploitable.
The shortcut glitch situation. Well, if you, myself, and John, you know, were to get together then, you know, and leave James out of it, obviously, then we could probably get, you know, a nice sporting game.
And you know, the thing about Mario Kart, and we talked about this a lot on Mario Kart Wii when that came out, we were playing that online. I feel like the online racing in Mario Kart 7 is not that different enough from the Grand Prix against the computer, and so to me, it's not that totally different of an experience, but I am looking forward to things like PAX East and E3 where we can play some local multiplayer, because I think that will actually be really fun, and it's not something I've gotten to do at all.
It's fun, yeah. I mean, what I've done actually is have a friend in the same room. They go online and I join their game. So we're both playing online, but we're playing in the same room at the same time.
That could be fine, yeah.
But, that's it, is it, for your...
No. Nano Assault is my fourth and final 3DS game, which I've probably played the least of because it's a shorter game and it's a shoot 'em up, so you wouldn't expect it to be really long. But I have played it for probably 5 or 6 hours, and I think as shoot 'em ups go, it's actually kind of on the long side. I only played through the story mode once. I've gone back. I actually played some on the plane today, some arcade mode. Those arcade challenges, some of them are very difficult to complete, and this stuff like, you know, get 30,000 points in this level. Well, I've tried it several times. I feel like I know the game pretty well, and yet I can only get about 2/3 of that. So what that tells me is there must be something about the scoring system that I don't understand, or there must be just a better way to play the game that I don't grasp yet. So I think there's more depth to it than I've plumbed so far. Nano Assault's one of those games I'm never going to, like, you know, spend a whole week playing it and just get crazy over it, but it's a game that is very easy to jump back into, and I probably will be doing so over time.
Nice. Well, so then that is it then.
Oh, yes. And I am, by the way, once my New Year's resolution period ends in about another week, I will be on the prowl. There's a couple of 3DS retail games that have been out for a while that you can now get pretty cheap. So I'm going to be looking, if I can get Pilot Wings Resort for like $15, which I think I can, I might jump into that. And Shinobi, at any price, Shinobi is a game that I am interested in picking up after everything you said, Greg. So my collection might be expanding soon, but other than that, there's not a whole lot on the release schedule coming out in the next few months that I'm really excited about, at least.
For me, there's a number of games that have already come out that I have some interest in that could sort of fill in here and there. I mean, Tales of the Abyss, for instance, is one that I've been thinking about. I like my RPGs portable, ideally, and I've never played Tales game. That could be one thing. Ace Combat, James likes that one. Again, never played the series. Could be an interesting introduction. Cave Story is still out there. We've talked about that kind of saga before. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a fair few. And then, of course, we've got all the new games coming up and whatnot. But we'll now move into the digital part of our purchases over the past year. So I purchased straight away Super Mario Land, Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, and then went on to Donkey Kong 94, Game & Watch Gallery, Gargoyle's Quest, Super Mario Land 2, Cat Trap, Bionic Commando, and Wario Land. So it's a pretty nice haul for the retro stuff. That should be no surprise to listeners, of course. And then eShop, original games, or even DSiWare games. I've bought fewer of than I would have thought. There's still a lot of DSiWare games that I'm very much interested in that I just haven't picked up yet, like Shantae and stuff. For whatever reason, I just want to play the PC games more. You know, like that's day one download for me, is sort of like Wario Land. But I have played Escape, Mighty Milky Way, those are the two DSiWare games, and then Pushma, of course, and Mighty Switch Force, the eShop exclusive for WayForward game. So, you know, not a lot there, actually, but there's a great deal more that I could have been buying. So, James, have you got anything to say in this area?
I do have Pushmo, and I have Kirby 3D Classic Adventure, which I just bought because I love the NES game a lot. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot. I found, you know, for me, Pushmo, I just found it to be really easy, even relatively late into the game, so I never really talked about
what?
It. I did!
You must be really good at this stuff, because I got to a point in Pushmo. Now, I am fairly late, but once you start adding in, like, four different color pipes and four different colored buttons to step on, those puzzles just be... The concepts aren't that much different, but there's just so many layers to keep track of, and if you make a mistake, sometimes it feels like you know, there are ways to screw yourself where you really just have to start the whole level over again, and I'm wishing it would collapse back down and give me a new mechanic to explore on a more simple level.
It did start to get a bit more difficult, but I mean, I went through so many sets where it was just automatic that I just lost interest.
There's quite a few of those murals that aren't particularly hard in the first
but
half of the
fine.
Game anyway. But that definitely is a favorite of mine, Pushmo. I don't think it really competes with the some of the retail games for time played, but certainly compared to the downloadable stuff, that's right up there. Although Link's Awakening, I think I played for about 20 hours.
Yeah, that's the game I need to get. I just keep forgetting because I don't own any virtual console games.
Well, it's okay. I pretty much... But eShop Game Boy games for two people at least. Like, I don't want to compare retro girth here, but
I have very, very, very pixely girth, though, isn't it? You know,
please don't do that.
Whip out your collection, please.
Custer's Revenge.
It would be faster to list the ones that I didn't buy, but I've got like 15, 15 Game Boy games on here, including Luck and Chase for some reason, Radar Mission.
God.
Lock and Chase?
Jesus! What? How did we get here?
Were you drunk one night? You said, wow, Lock and Chase, what the hell?
Why is that even on the eShop?
I'm missing television.
It's not it's not bad. It's like, I don't know. I didn't
it's
buy...
Lock and Chase!
It's like Pac-Man, except with power-ups. What's not to like?
That's awesome. Lock and Chase. Even I haven't played that. My old ass, I haven't played that. Good lord.
Adventure Island. Radar Mission, which I bought thinking it was Solar Striker. That was completely stupid.
What? Not at all.
I'm telling you, alcohol was a factor. Check the police report on all of these purchases. You will see that alcohol was a factor.
Also, Burger Time Deluxe, which is surprisingly good. I never, ever in my life liked Burger Time, but I still bought this game. Based on... I don't know, Twitter's recommendation, whoever is on there.
The people who made Burger Time Deluxe.
It's actually like a decent version, like varied levels and like decent presentation. But yeah, like I don't know, I really eat that stuff up. And I actually, like I never owned an NES when I was a kid. I had a Game Boy. So lots of fun memories here.
What about eShop, though? How much have you sort of got into that? I mean, were you somebody that already had, like, a collection of DSiWare, so you didn't have to, like,
yeah,
dip?
I'm a lucky and happy DSiXL owner.
Oh, good
so
man.
So, I have tons of stuff on there and no DSiWare on my 3DS except for Art Academy. It was through Club Nintendo. But I do have like all the 2D platformers, of course, BVV, VVV, Mutant Muds, Mighty Switch Force. But the game that I've played the most is Zen Pinball, which I already played on PSN, but the 3DS version is really, really, really good. Like, there's only 4 tables on there, but, like, I have no complaints with them. And the 3D effect is really put to good use, because one of the settings, the camera settings that you have, really puts the camera lower to the table, and so you really see, like, you really benefit from the depth.
It's interesting, because, I mean, one of the things that I really like about Metroid Prime Pinball, and I imagine by extension that Pinball Pulse game that the same people, Fuse Games, made for DSiWare, which I would have bought if it had been on the eShop from day one, but it wasn't due to compatibility issues or something. It was on the do not transfer list.
Right.
And then by the time they made it compatible, Zen Pinball had already come out.
Way to ruin your market, guys.
It doesn't look quite as attractive now because they're both the same price. But one of the things I like about Fuse Games Pinball sort of template is the fact that you have that portrait view of the table playing out across the two screens, which you have the weirdness with the dead space in the middle. Yeah. But once you get used to that, I like being able to see, you know, when I play stuff like Williams Pinball, I zoom out the view and play looking down on the table. And so I get a good view and the angles seem very sort of obvious. But obviously with it all crammed up on that one screen, the 3D screen at the top for Zen Pinball, and like you said, they're using the depth by putting it low. I mean, I imagine that looks good, but you find that perfectly playable, you know?
Initially I was not too convinced. Like, there's no denying that the resolution is low and the screen is small, and I was disappointed at first, and I was just like really, I'm supposed to keep track of that tiny ball? Like, it's yeah, I was apprehensive, but turns out that you can get used to anything, I guess. But after a while, like, you can get pretty good scores, and it's perfectly playable, as long as, I guess, you don't jostle around too much. Like, you, if you lose a 3D effect, or if you play in 2D, the game is really not impressive. But as soon as you turn the 3D on, it's one of the best-looking 3D games that I've played so far.
Oh, that's interesting. Definitely, I'm thinking about getting some more pinball going pretty soon.
Yeah, and it's got like the friends leaderboards and everything online.
Yeah,
so
that's a big thing.
Does it actually have leaderboards that only show your friends?
Yeah, you can choose.
That's good.
Yeah, you've got some by country, by worldwide, and friends only.
That's great, because there's so many Wii games, for instance, that do online leaderboards, but they don't show your friends, so you can't really compare against your friends. And, you know, I don't really care that I'm the 9,000th best Sin and Punishment 2 player.
You're not that good.
It's totally irrelevant. No, they didn't actually sell that many copies, so I am that good. I'm probably better than that. but having the leaderboard that is filtered to just your friends is so important, because those are the relationships you care about. Those are the comparisons that you care about. Am I better than my friend? Did he just do better than me? Can I now play more and try to get better than his score? That keeps you coming back and back and back, and it works so well at Geometry Wars. And I'm excited. That, I mean, Zen Pinball is on my list. But there are now so many games I want to buy once my New Year's resolution is over that I'm keeping a list so I don't forget them. And that's on there.
If you pick up Zen Pinball, I will pick up Zen Pinball. I love pinball games.
Are you trying to convince?
I've got to admit, like, I've played the game for 16 hours so far, and I've slowed down recently a little bit. The one issue I have with it is the one I have with every pinball game or every high score type of game, and it's that it takes longer and longer and longer for you to get to the point where, you know, your score actually starts to matter. Because, when you're comparing to your own scores or to leaderboards, as you get better scores, but it takes, you know, like, might take at some point an hour to get to the point where you were at. And then that's when, like, suddenly, okay, and now I'm actually improving my score and now it counts.
Yeah. Well, that's how you end up stopping. It's just that when it takes so long, right. to better a previous score, that you know, it does kind of just become more and more distant. But, you know, that's the thing about time attack games like Steel Diver. You're actually shortening the time that you do it.
Or Pac-Man Championship Edition has like the 5 minutes time limit, which is perfect.
Yeah, I like those kind of challenges. It's a fair point. But well, Johnny, obviously you've been a patron of the eShop. It was pretty instrumental in the timing of you picking up a system in addition to E3. So what is the full list of stuff you picked up?
The full list? Okay. VVVVVV, highly recommended game. John, did you get this yet? Or are you going to?
I have not picked it up yet, but...
It is totally up your alley, dude. It looks like an Intellivision game.
I look like an Intellivision game.
Damn it, John!
Or at least box art.
That, to me, I mean, one thing, I talked about the fact that I've got relatively few eShop purchases, but some of it is what isn't out, like VVVVVV and Mutant Muds. Very interested in both of those.
Right. Mutant Muds I'll be picking up next week. Pushmo, I've got Freaky Forms, which is, I haven't spent a lot of time in it because it's not a terribly deep thing, and I'm not the kind of person who's going to spend a lot of time creating content in my video games.
But your content's alive.
It is highly amusing. And if I had people to street pass with to actually exchange these guys, I would probably be playing it a lot more. So Freaky Forms might come back into my life here in the next few months as I meet other weirdos who also have it. But it is really, really hilarious game. Mighty Switch Force, I'm kind of on that one. And yeah, that's all. So only four so far, but a couple more queued up. And there's some more really good-looking stuff coming out in the next few months. I think eShop is very promising.
Yeah, it seems to be gathering steam. There's some good exclusive content on there at this point. That, right, well, there we've all managed to compare various software libraries over the course of the past year. I think the next thing we want to sort of talk about is some of the usage patterns of these things, how it's kind of changed relative to what we were doing with DS or DSi. Like, I mean, how much have you found yourself taking it with you more than you did before because of the Street Pass stuff, or maybe playing it less on the go because the battery life's bad, or you know, that kind of thing? Like, how has it changed your portable gaming lifestyle compared to where it was before?
You know, for me, the battery has never been a real major issue. There have only really been a couple of times where the light started going red and I said, oh, okay, I guess I should stop playing. Very rare. But it's also relatively rare that I play my 3DS outside the house. So I take it outside the house quite often, to get to another point of your question. And I think the Street Pass functionality is really exciting. I think Nintendo has done a great job on this system of making it easy to use, of making it low risk. You don't have to choose which game you want to Street Pass with. It just kind of does all of them at the same time. And I think that's really important. And the PlayCoins thing is starting to become used a little bit better than it was in the early days, but that is sort of a secondary function of me carrying it around with me. And, you know, it's not like I'm going to places that I wouldn't have gone to otherwise just because of the possibility of street passing. But it does kind of make me think, hey, I'm going out to the mall, and the mall has a lot of people, and it's kind of a nexus, you know, where a lot of people are crossing paths. The airport is another great place. Concerts, I've tried. Haven't had great success at concerts except at Red Rocks, and that was for Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So it's kind of stacked in my favor in that case. But airports do surprisingly well. Actually, today got one in the San Diego airport and another one in the Denver airport.
Did you cross through a Nintendo zone when you were in the airport?
No, my hotel had one because they had AT&T Wi-Fi, so they technically qualified as a Nintendo zone.
Yeah, all you have to do is rename your router.
Nintendo zone is worthless regardless, but airports are surprisingly good, and I would recommend that people try to street pass at the airport, keeping in mind that you do need to turn off the wireless function before the plane takes off. So that is important, of course, but it does work really well. And for me, street pass, it's just so exciting to see that you've made contact with someone else who's nerdy enough to actually own a 3DS and carry it around with them, and to see who that person is. And sometimes it's surprising where they're from, what they've been playing, what they look like, you know, what their name is. And it's this really cool social thing of just kind of barely brushing up against someone who is otherwise a total stranger you'll probably never see again, and thinking, well, we've got this one thing in common and we can actually kind of use it. You know, we can actually get something out of it. You can get a mystery box in Mario, or you can get a new me for or a piece of a puzzle. And that is really exciting. And then when you go to an event where, you know, the cards are really stacked for street passing, like you're going to a Zelda concert or you're going to PAX or you're going to E3, those are just crazy. I mean, that is still to this day the most fun I've had on my 3DS was at E3 last year, right after I got it, because the street pass was just ridiculous.
It almost became unmanageable. There was so much street pass going on.
It'll be the same way at PAX East too. That's why, that's why I wanted to get one before PAX East.
It'll be so much worse, because A, it's more people. And B, there's more people who are not just journalists who don't know anything about video games sent by their respective press pools.
Even at E3, I think it was a very small minority of people who already had a 3DS, but we were circling the same areas all the time. You know? And it was just really exciting. And even then, you know, if you got 50 street passes in a day, I mean, it was unfathomable that that could happen anywhere else in America. At PAX East, everybody is going to have a 3DS. I mean, you guys have seen the Pokemon situation in last year.
Keep in mind, it was awesome. And I mentioned this at the time. My first street pass, even though I had had the system since launch, was at E3. Mm-hmm. And I got like 100 of them.
Yeah. I think I had almost 300 for the whole event. And this year, it's going to be double that easily. I mean, it's just going to be outrageous. And that is, street passing is always exciting when it happens naturally, but when it happens in a forced situation like that, it's even better because everybody's doing it all the time. It's this giant game that everyone's playing together all the time. And it's just, it's really, really fun to do. So, I'm excited to do more of that. And the other big thing about how I play 3DS, I think, is just that I'm downloading things to it. You know, I didn't have a DSi, so I never had that experience. I don't download a lot of things to my iPhone because I don't think that most of the games are really worth messing with. I don't do a lot of miscellaneous apps either. So for me, the idea of downloading something on a portable system and then carrying that around, it's given me access to a lot more games. And if you looked at like my top 20 in the activity log, what you'd see is that, obviously only 4 of them are retail games, but a Ridge Racer might not even be in the top 20. No. And it's this crazy smorgasbord of Game Boy titles, Game Boy Advance titles, NES titles, eShop titles, applications like Swapnote. It's this wild mix, and so it feels like the things that I'm doing on 3DS are a lot more varied than they were on my DS, and even over a much shorter period of time. And the fact that I have all of these games that I paid very little money for, in some cases paid no money for through Club Nintendo, it makes up a lot for the fact that there aren't that many retail games that I've been playing and enjoying.
Yeah, it's been a real sort of journey. I think it's the way I've used it has changed a great deal, because obviously I date back to the time when there wasn't an eShop.
Right.
So at that point, you know, I was pretty much just playing it at home with the battery life concerns. You know, I would take it with me, but not to play. In terms of what I would be playing on the train or something like that, that would still be on the DS Lite, stuff like, you know, Picross or, you know, Slitherlink now. You know, I tend to prefer something that's got the battery life there, and also the kind of game as well is an issue. But as the year went on, I think what sort of changed in terms of the attractiveness of taking it with me to play is that it became like this gaming jukebox when you got the ambassador games.
Yeah.
Just because, well, you know, maybe I don't really have anything in mind to play necessarily, but I'll take it with me and then something might strike me. That's what I want to do. When you've got the Game Boy Virtual Console library I talked about and the ambassador games and the eShop games and, you know, leave a game card in as well. You've got a lot of choices there, and that's definitely very different to the way I was consuming games portably, obviously with the DS Lite because I didn't have a DSi. So it definitely, as it went on, you know, I started to use it in different ways rather than just playing it, you know, sort of like a console at home, which was kind of the way it started. And that's still the case for certain games, like, you know, Resident Evil is not going to happen on a train or something like that. You know, no way. With the Street Pass, yeah. You know, I mean, sometimes I might use it as an MP3 player, even though other MP3 players would be more practical. Just like, well, I'm going to take it with me. I may as well use it for something. But I still feel a bit like that battery life is a bit of an impediment, you know, because say, for instance, if I played it for 45 minutes in, 45 minutes out in terms of trade, that's an hour and a half. And then you've got it on sleep mode for a certain amount of time. It's getting dicey.
Right.
And I'm still not necessarily convinced in some cases, if you're having the 3D effect on, especially like with the brightness and stuff. DS light games tend to be more like clearly visible when you're playing them outdoors. There's less of that kind of stuff to worry about. So it hasn't completely killed off my DS light in that way at this point. Now, Guillaume, obviously you've got the XL, which is a whole other thing. So I was wondering, you know, it's kind of a question that Johnny asked of James last week, you know, how much are you still using that, or how has it kind of changed over the year?
Well, pretty much every time I play a DS game, I'll play on the XL, like Mass Attack or Radiant Historia. There's no way I'm going to be playing that on the 3DS. But I've never been a portable gamer, really. Like, I've always owned them, and I've always played them, but I play them at home. Or during long rides, like, let's say, like a bus to a different city or on the plane. My commute to work is too short and too bumpy to really play games, and I'm never sitting, so it's just like, if I don't want to find myself or my 3DS on the floor, I better not take it out. But I have been street passing a lot. Like, I went to E3 too, and yeah, I got tons of street passes there. In Montreal, like, the subway system is a good place. Like, I always get one or two street passes at least every day. Like, I've never done that before, like taking my handheld to work, because there's no time and there's no place that I can play games there. But yeah, still every day I take my nerd detector and I go to work. Like, E3 was fantastic. Like, I mean, not only like you street pass with other nerds like you, but I've got like Yuji Naka or John Riccitiello. And John Riccitiello actually has like this special me with golden pants.
Yes.
It's really, really weird.
That's so awesome.
And I'm really looking forward to PAX and everything.
So you've played it mostly as a console at home kind of thing, but strictly for your 3DS games, and you've been getting into the Street Pass stuff. I mean, yeah, I wish I got more Street Passes apart from the, you know, the Zelda Avalanche, the concert.
Don't we all, Greg?
That was pretty. No, I'd like to get them as often as Guillaume. That would be nice. I mean, on the occasions when I have taken it with me on the train, it hasn't been as productive as I might have thought. I don't know, maybe that's going to change incrementally, but I've still had some great moments with Street Pass. So just recently, actually, I Street Passed someone actually who had Revelations, which was quite a surprise. And one of the things you get in that is you get like an achievement style task to do, where you get a little note from the person that you Street Pass with that says, like, basically, oh, you know, if you find me in this level and I've turned into a zombie, please kill me. And that gets you some sort of like perk, you know, some little unlockable thing for weapons or whatever in the raid. But it's pretty funny.
Yeah, see, I have actually had my first Street Pass.
Ooh, already.
Wow. Already.
He's going up so fast.
I don't know where I got it, but I brought it to work, and I'm sure somebody at work maybe has a 3DS. I don't know, somebody, like, I work in an office complex, so there's with a kind of a common area where everybody sits down and eats. So I don't know where it was, but
Could be able to see that, John, with the way Street Pass works, the Street Pass Quest, the RPG game, is that the more times you Street Pass with that same guy, assuming he also frequents your office building, then he'll get more powerful in the RPG when you use his me.
Hmm. He levels up.
Think of it like that grinding in those games you love.
James. But yeah, so the whole Street Pass thing, it makes me want to take it wherever I go, right? It makes me want to actually just bring it around with me just to see what happens, kind of as a passive game, which is brilliant.
Before we kind of move on to the next part of this discussion, I think one thing we should address, given this is the 3DS, just a quick sort of up and down on this. The 3D, how much have we used it? Johnny, to you first.
For me, it's always on unless I have a specific reason to turn it off. And when I say on, I mean all the way up.
Even with Ridge Racer, you're a brave man.
Game is 3D as hell.
That's why I bought it.
Oh, I know. That's the only reason to own that game, because it is 3 fucking D.
It is hella 3D. So, yeah, I mean, the only time I will adjust the slider is if, for instance, if I am sitting on a plane, I might be sort of limited to the angle that I can hold it away from me, you know, because of the tray table or my arms are propped up on these very narrow armrests or something. So if I'm not in a environment where I can kind of hold it how I would like to hold it, then I might turn it down a little bit if I have to hold it too close to my face or something. And then I'll occasionally turn it off if I'm very intentionally trying to conserve battery life. That's kind of rare. Mm-hmm. But in general, I like playing with the 3D on because, you know, I like the effect. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't give me a headache or anything like that. And I would prefer for it to be cranked all the way up if possible.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a little weird. At first, it was definitely weird. James and I shared the story about making text on your laptop seem to come out of the screen.
Yeah, that happened to me too.
It's a common thing. It kind of seems to mess with your eyes at first. Certainly, when I first played Pilot Wings Resort, I did not have the 3D slider all the way up. But as time's gone on, I've pretty much played everything in 3D and everything with it all the way up. So there are some issues with ghosting, particularly in certain kinds of games, but broadly speaking, I like it enough to kind of suffer through that if it's a little bit of a problem. And with some of the great games, you know, like 3D Land or Mario Kart 7, I really don't notice it at all. I just think it's so completely colourful, it isn't such an issue. So James, what about you with the 3D? Did you blast it all the way up for Ace Combat and feel
it? Of course, and because it's an Namco Bandai game, Ace Combat takes 3D and says, nah, this needs to be more. Let's make it 3D times 11. It's 33D. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
I'm a big fan of 33D myself.
That game is just monumentally stupid with the, so like, you don't notice the 3D when you're way high up, and when you get close, you're like, ah!
But I mean, you've played all the games like that?
The slider on my 3DS has never moved.
So, Guillaume, what about you?
Yeah, like, initially I had the same troubles with, like, getting acclimated, I guess. But since then, like, everything looks a little bit better with 3D on, so it's always on. There was, like, the special case of Rayman 3D, which, with the ghosting, was just too obnoxious. So that I played in 2D, and I thought, like, yeah, I'll just look at my shadow when I'm jumping around. But other than that, like, I don't see any reason, really, to turn it off.
No, you do hear people that say, oh, well, I don't play with the 3D on anyway, or, you know.
Yeah.
They're missing out.
Now, John, of course, you've been, you know, listening to all this, talking about our sort of year owning the 3DS. You only just got one a few days ago. So I was wondering, having heard it all, looked at all the developments, or do you feel vindicated, John? Do you think you made the right call, the price drop, all the droughts, whatever? You feel like you got it right and we got it wrong?
Well, I feel like I'm coming in at a good time. I haven't taken any pleasure in seeing price drops. And
I've just been enjoying it.
It's just, I kind of, you know, there weren't really any games at launch that I wanted, and I really couldn't afford one anyways. So I just kind of held off. And then, you know, I did actually have enough money to pick one up. And so I said, well, you know, I'm going to get one. It was on sale at Newegg for $150. Mm. So I said, you know what?
Good
I'm going to finally just buy this thing, and I'm going to get the games that I want for it. And it was funny because even with everything I bought, you know, two games, I bought like the screen protector and I bought a little case for it. Even with that, it was still $10 more than the base unit for the Vita. So that's kind of one of those things that...
Or the original price of the 3DS.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true, I assumed you were going with that.
Yeah. But see, that's the whole thing. See, I don't even think about the old price of the 3DS. Yeah. Like, but yeah, I mean, and I probably honestly would have bought one at $170, but obviously, again, $249, too much money for me. But $249 with a couple of games, that's a good spot price-wise for me.
So, I mean, was it always sort of a fait accompli that you were going to get one? It was just a matter of time. Or did you ever think, maybe it won't succeed? Maybe I won't need to get it.
No, it was just a matter of time before I got one. Just because, you know, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Nintendo handhelds. Loved the DS. And also the fact, too, that, I mean, for me, it's kind of like I look at Nintendo handhelds because I know so many people that love Nintendo and always have their handhelds that it's kind of like, for me, in terms of handheld gaming, it's like Xbox Live is to me. If I want to play a console game online, chances are I'll get it for Xbox Live because I know everybody. I have tons of friends on Xbox Live. So that's just kind of like my choice. And for handhelds, Nintendo was an easy choice because from the day I turn it on, I'm putting 25 people in my friends list. So it's just easy, especially now with how connected this 3DS is. It's even better.
It's definitely improving in that regard as well. I mean, again, in terms of coming in at a good time, you're coming at the point with something like Mario Kart, you've got the whole join game thing that's going to make it, which is a shame that's not as standard, because I don't think that works for Resident Evil if you wanted to join someone's raid mode game online or something. But probably most Nintendo games, you know, like Kid Icarus is going to have it and all. I mean, that helps a lot if you just flip open the friends list and you see somebody's playing Mario Kart, just think, I'll play with them.
Yeah.
That is a big change from where we were with, Street Fighter or DOA early on in the process.
Yeah, and I mean, it was really big having two key games that are instant purchases for me. It was kind of, it was several factors kind of combining, along with a long-term purchase intent.
Yeah, well, I mean, but was there ever a time where you thought, could I hold out for the redesign? Because we all know it's coming, and it might not be that far away.
It crossed my mind, I thought about it, but...
I hope they announce it tomorrow.
I could get... Well, that's the thing. I could get... It's interesting. I thought about that because I actually read somewhere that... Because when I was actually looking for this, because I had cash to spend, right? So I was kind of looking for a good deal on it. And on Newegg, it was on sale. It was $20 off. And on Amazon, curiously enough, because normally I buy everything on Amazon... Everything was out of stock, which I thought was really weird. So I was kind of like, Newegg is trying to dump their inventory of the 3DS. Amazon's entirely out of stock. So kind of what's going on here? But I was like, you know what? I'm getting this for a good price. I want it now. There's actually games out there that I want that I'm looking forward to playing. I've always wanted one for a long time. So I was like, forget it. You know what? I had the original DS, had the DS Lite and the DSi. So I'll probably buy the 3DS redesign too down the road. I mean, the only one I don't have is the DSi XL, and I would probably buy that if I had the money. So
yeah, John, I think you made a pretty safe decision because this is my personal prediction, but I think it's going to be at least a year before any redesign is going to be released. It might be announced before the end of this year, especially in Japan. So I think you've got a long margin. And then the other thing is we've discussed this on the show before, but whatever form the redesign takes, there are many factors that lead us to the conclusion that it's probably going to be a chance for Nintendo to raise the price and raise their profit margin on the system, especially now that they're taking a loss on the base unit. So if price is that big of a factor for you, then I think waiting would have done you no good because it probably would have just reinforced your desire to get the original unit because it's going to be considerably less expensive than whatever the redesign is.
Well, one point though, interestingly, when they were Nintendo was doing some of their investors briefings and whatnot, they noted that this year they are going to move back into selling at break even or at a profit. The base year that they're bringing their manufacturing costs of the existing 3DS design down, such that they're moving back in the right direction. So, in that sense, maybe it's not as urgent, to redesign the system if you're not making a loss on each unit at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's coming. We all know that. It's just a question of when.
Yeah, and for them, it's also a chance to sell a second system to the same person, which is a pretty large slice of their business model. So I suspect they will certainly still do it regardless. But, in terms of them getting their costs down so that they break even, that's probably the point where they normally would do a price cut. Like that's where they would have nominally preferred to do this kind of price cut. They probably would have dropped it to like $200.
That's right.
But instead, we just got it early. And so we're going to go through that period. It's going to be very quiet. They'll focus on software.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, just having sort of illustrated the contrast between John's experience with 3DS and ours, would anyone swap places if they did it all again? Would they rather have done what John's done?
Part of me says I should probably say yes, but I don't feel like I should. Like, I feel like having had the 3DS when I did and having gone through the, oh my god, where are the games? Like, it almost does something that sort of make me appreciate these games more.
I thought that when the Bills had been out of the playoffs for 5 years.
If I look back at the games that I've played on it, for the most part, I've played a lot of games, but I've played a lot of games very little, because of all the Game Boy stuff, the eShop stuff, the Ambassador stuff, the DSi stuff that I never had access to before. So I've got a lot of software on my 3DS. none of it, the game that I've played the most is Dragon Quest VI, which is a DS game. And so none of the stuff that I can play on my 3DS that I couldn't play on my DS Lite has gotten that much attention. But if you add up all of those experiences, I have played it a decent amount. And then to me, the amount that I have played it is sort of like break even in terms of, you know, paying too much for it to begin with and how long I've had it. But then to me, the tipping point is just that wonderful experience of going to E3. And to me, that was so positive that I'm just glad that I had it right then and there.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think I bought it at exactly the right moment.
Now, Guillaume, you mentioned playing that initial four launch titles so little. I sense remorse in that regard, but is it just for buying that number of launch games, or is it buying the system that early in general?
Well, actually, like, I knew pretty much what I was getting into when I bought it on launch day. Like, I've always been kind of a late adopter, partly because I didn't have money. I was a student and everything for every launch. But this time, okay, I had the money, and I also wanted to be part of the launch excitement. Like, I never had that experience before. And not only that, but I had, you know, started the Negative World podcast, so I wanted to be able to talk about it, to talk about the new handheld. So, yeah, I knew pretty much what I was getting into. Like, before that, I always waited for the one killer app that would convince me, like, push me over the edge. This time, obviously none of the four launch games that I bought were that killer app. I probably could have waited until 3D Land, but I was fine with paying $250 back then for the 3DS, so...
Well, how much do you feel legitimately reimbursed by the Ambassador Program in that regard? We've talked about that plenty of times, but for you?
I had owned most of these GBA games, so... And I'm not one... Like, I'm big into retro gaming, but not necessarily into, like, replaying games that I've played back in the day. And the NES games are not the ideal way to experience these games. Like, I had the ones that I wanted to play, I had already played on the Wii's Virtual Console.
So in that case, do you not feel like it constituted $70 in value or whatever?
Well, I don't know. Like, actually, like, in the end, like, I didn't think I would be playing Fire Emblem The Sacred Stones, and I did not play it during the Retroactive Game Club. But listening to the podcast, that convinced me that perhaps I should give the game another shot. I had played the game back in the day, and I didn't really finish it. Like, I was too hung up on the whole not losing any party members thing. And then listening to you guys talk about how it didn't really ultimately matter that much. Now I've played it for, like, 23 hours. I'm close to the end. So I don't know. Like, I think, like, and I'm happy that I didn't have to pull out the regular DS Lite to do so. So I was never promised the Ambassador Games program, so it didn't really factor in.
No, I mean, I wouldn't have expected them to do it, but then I wouldn't have expected them to drop the price by a third globally, obviously. Mm. But I don't feel like a fool for not predicting that. That was unprecedented.
No, I mean, if you predicted that, you work at Nintendo and are leaking information.
Yeah, that was legitimately shocking. But I have no regrets there. I think for me, the only choice would have been whether really I would have got it just sort of more like at the time that Johnny did, just before the eShop came out. Because once the eShop came out, there's no way I was going to hold out on playing stuff like Link's Awakening, the Super Mario Land 2 and all that kind of stuff. I picked up a modest sort of collection of Game Boy cartridges going back because GBA was my first portable. So, you know, over the years I've picked up stuff like Oracle of Ages or Donkey Kong 94 or Wario Land 3, but to have the chance now to get them, you know, digitally and in a convenient way, and much like with the Virtual Console on Wii, but even more so because it's portable, there was no way I was going to wait beyond June. So it's really a question of, you know, how much I got out of it sort of before that. And, you know, I'd being part of the launch excitement was fun, and I really like Pilot Wings, and I got a lot of use out of DOA as well. As a very robust fighting game with good multiplayer features as well. So I don't really feel like I regret what I did, but I think John was very prudent.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've gone through the drought of the DS, so I got that at launch, and that was just a miserable first year.
It was. I think people have forgotten just how bad DS was the first year.
Oh,
I mean,
it was.
We're talking 2004. It was a long time ago, and it was ugly. And the thing for me, the reason I waited for the eShop is because I knew the same thing was going to happen for 3DS. I knew that the first year would not have a lot of great retail games that I wanted to play, but I also knew that eShop and DSiWare and Virtual Console stuff would fill in those gaps, and it totally did. And my plan worked out perfectly there. And it was based on my experience with Wii. You know, Wii had a fairly slow launch period after Zelda and Wii Sports wore off. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff coming out that I really wanted, but having the Virtual Console meant that I was coming back every single week and playing for at least a few hours. And then, you know, when WiiWare came out, there was a time when it was doing the same thing. So I knew that having these weekly digital releases, it does keep the system alive, and it keeps you engage with it on a more consistent, regular basis than just retail titles will.
Absolutely. I find that very much. Now, we're going to move to wrap up the feature with some sort of quickfire little bits here. So I've got, first of all, best and worst of the 3DS so far, your sort of favourite thing about owning the system to date and your least favourite thing. Start with James. Maybe you could only do the latter one if you want.
I mean, for me, my favorite things are probably just going through E3 and the absolute deluge of street passes I was getting. I mean,
that seems like a pretty strong contender here. I mean, for me, the Zelda concert was similar. I could kind of, probably not, it's not as epic.
Well, I think one thing that Johnny and I got over that you wouldn't have had the chance to experience is street passing the same people multiple times.
Yeah.
There was a guy I street passed, you know, two times one day, one time the next day, and over again. I'd be like, all right, I want to look for this guy in the crowd. Where is he at? The thing about when you'd clear out 10 people waiting in line to go into the Nintendo Roundtable, and then immediately you'd have to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
There was just something about that in an environment that's already a pressure cooker where you're harried about doing things, like rapidly trying to check off checkboxes and get things done, having to constantly clear out 10 people only to see your efforts completely net you nothing but 10 more things to clear out, seems like it should be horrible, but at the same time, it's just weirdly enjoyable.
Yeah, it's great. I had a bit of that definitely with the concert. I don't know when it'll happen again, but I certainly hope it will. But least favorite, there's a fair few options here.
Least favorite is a broad brush to paint with, but I'm going to go ahead and say my least favorite thing about the 3DS experience has been just the massive port deluge it got. I mean, it's a bit better now, but there were a lot of ports to the 3DS. And I mean, I know that's normal, but I want to see more original content, and we're starting to get there.
Wait until Wii U.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the example I usually hold up is Rayman 2, which had no business being released.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But on the other hand, like, I think every platform we expect Ubisoft to do that.
Yeah, but even for them, this was beyond the pale.
Well, maybe, but I think the point is, with the 3DS, it's just the whole sort of 3D remake thing. You know, you see it in the cinema as well. You know, it's just something that seems to happen with this whole 3D phenomenon. It's just like, well, it's acceptable to give people the same thing, but now it's in 3D. And so Nintendo is very much getting in on the act, and plenty of other companies, you know, it went well beyond Ubisoft.
No, I was just saying that was the one I hold up as the flag, but there's a bunch of offenders here, and Nintendo themselves is guilty of these kinds.
Zelda and Star Fox are freaking ports, basically. I mean, Zelda is more of a remake, but...
I really enjoyed those, personally, but I don't think they were very good anchors for the system. You know, I mean, those were the flagship releases in the middle of very tough times, and in that sense, they were not well chosen.
No, and I think it set expectations very low. I mean, it basically said, well, if they're porting the best of the early to mid N64, what are we going to get for the system?
All right, well, Guillaume, your best and worst.
The worst would... Well, I've got my 3DS here. It's got a streak on the top screen, permanent. The D-pad creaks. The select and start buttons are unusable. So, yeah, who designed this thing? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm really looking forward to the redesign, and not for the reasons that I expected to. Like, I'm not even, like, they could reduce the battery life. I wouldn't care. Just have a handheld that's designed to be closed and have buttons that I can use. And the best, actually would be the Street Pass thing. Like, I have been carrying this thing around a lot, and I've been in the Mi Plaza, for a total of 17 hours, 176 times played. Like, I really got more use out of this than I ever thought I would. And I've never done that before. Like, I mean, like, this ensures that I, use the 3DS at least once every weekday.
Well, for my best and worst, there's sort of two sides of the same coin. My best, definitely Virtual Console, playing a lot of these games, things I've been looking forward to for a long time, and I'm finally doing it. And like I said, embellished by the Ambassador games, you're creating this sort of retro jukebox portable is something I've always wanted. And the worst is that the eShop took as long as it did to show up. That simple. It's just ridiculous, and definitely a big drawback to those first few months owning the system. Johnny?
I'll start with the worst so I can end with the best. And for me, the worst is the touch screen. I think this technology is really outdated. I think it's very poor. And it was acceptable in 2004 when no one really owned touchscreen devices. It was very, very novel. But the implementation is really archaic now, and it just doesn't feel good. And I'm not even necessarily comparing it directly to my iPhone, which obviously has a very good touchscreen. But the 3DS touchscreen, to me, doesn't even feel as good as the DS Lite touchscreen. And my DS Lite is pretty old and pretty heavily used. So I don't know what the deal is. And luckily, you know, with playing 3DS specific stuff and all the virtual console stuff, you don't really need it.
Unless you're playing Kid Icarus.
Well, in fact, it's one of the reasons I'm probably not going to get Kid Icarus, because I don't like the controls in that game, and the touchscreen is a big part of it. I just don't like it. I think there is a way to do a touchscreen with a stylus. I'm not saying they need to throw this away and go all multi-touch and shit like that, but there's a way to do it that feels modern, and this doesn't. And it's partly because of their backwards compatibility with DS, but I just feel like there's got to be a better solution here. So that's kind of my worst of, but the best of is, for me, and obviously this tied in with when and why I bought the system, but the way that 3DS is online and the things that it does online, and not even necessarily playing with other people, but being able to pull data down from the eShop, demos, all kinds of different video games, announcements, Swapnote, all of this stuff is really exciting for me. As someone who's wanted, and I know you appreciate this, John, yes. As someone who's wanted Nintendo to do better online stuff for a very long time, the 3DS is finally the first example that they're actually getting it. You know, I mean, with the Wii, yeah, it was like, let's see just how many mistakes they can make on one system online. And yep, the 3DS is like, let's see just how many things they can fix, you know, and even the things that they did poorly at first have gotten better. And I really feel like this is the beginning, the first fully fledged online Nintendo system, and Wii U will be even better, but Wii U isn't here yet, and 3DS is.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, the first thing I did, right, I was like, okay, I'm going to get Pushmo, so let's go on to the eShop and buy a game. So I was expecting at any point in the process of buying the game to reach that point where I was like, ah, Nintendo, you fucked up again, you see? And, you know, by the time I got to the point where it actually asked me if I wanted to save my credit card info, I was like, okay, finally, finally, they got it.
Yeah.
So that would be my best.
Yeah, the whole online environment, being able to see that your friends are online and see what they're playing and be able to join them in some cases. And the other thing is, unlike Wii, the online infrastructure of the 3DS is completely upgradable. At the most basic level, as we've already seen, it basically didn't have any at first, and then it did. You know, and then people love Street Pass Quest and were upset that it ran out. Nintendo said, okay, we'll just give you another dose of it that's so big you'll probably never, ever, ever finish it. And the fact that they can do stuff like that and that they are doing it, and 3DS is really just kind of the vessel for this effort, but it's making me love the system in a way that I could never have loved the DS, because the DS wasn't really online. The DS was a great system to play RPGs on for me, and a few action games. But that's pretty much it. And this is like, I feel like I'm actually engaging with Nintendo in a much healthier way than I have in the past. And I'm engaging with other gamers too. So that would be the best thing for me. I think it's really, really promising, the stuff they've done. And again, they're actually improving it month to month. So that's very exciting.
All right, well, we'll take us out on something, you know, maybe that we'd like them to improve or something we'd like to happen. Just some quick wishes for the future of the platform in the next year and beyond. I've got one obvious one. Treasure, come on, come to 3DS. You know you want to. I mean, they don't forget, they were big supporters of GBA. They did all sorts of stuff with that. You know, Astro Boy,
yep.
Advanced Guardian Heroes, Gunstar Superheroes. And then they did like a boxing game in Japan. And then DS, not so much. They did Bangayo and the Bleach games. But
right.
For an exceptionally long cycle as the DS had, that's not actually very much. So I'm not sure where they're going to stand with this particular Nintendo Portable, but it's very exciting, the thought of what they could do with it.
I mean, aren't they busy all the time making ports for XBLA? I mean,
recently.
Did they secretly get purchased?
But the flip side, actually, something quite different, is I really do hope we see greater uptake, you know, and greater interest from Western publishers, you know, and not just, you know, we get good stuff on the eShop, you know, if you're talking Renegade Kid and Way Forward and all that, yeah, we're fine. But
Nicholas, yeah.
If we're talking about Activision and EA actually doing something beyond, you know, I mean, they're not even following up like that first Madden game. I mean, it's kind of worrying just how, you know, I mean, a lot of the games that I bought on DS were Japanese in origin, and I expect that to be much the same with 3DS, naturally, and you see the robust support from people like Capcom. You're not worried that there's not going to be good games on the platform, but at the same time, you know, a lot of these Western publishers, yes, some of them are, you know, the biggest sinners in terms of annualized games, all that, but they also bring, you know, great games to the table, and sort of different flavor of games. And I think, you know, 3DS with its online integration, with the sort of level that it's got to with graphics, has a palette with which these publishers could work if they're inclined to do so. But at this point, I don't see that inclination, and I really hope, whether it's sales or whatever, or something happens that convinces them to dedicate some significant resources to the platform, and we get some really cool games. You know, people talk about, oh, wouldn't it be great if you had like a Dead Space game on there or something like, you know, that's one simple example.
The answer is yes.
Well, Johnny, how about you?
I think for me, the one thing I'd like to see more of and see improve, and it will, and I'm looking forward to it very much, is having RPGs on 3DS. And, you know, like I said, the game that I've played the most of on my system is Dragon Quest VI, which is a DS game. And if I'd gotten it a couple months earlier, it would have been Radiant Historia, which I played right before I got my 3DS. So obviously these are games that I really enjoy, and not only do I enjoy them, I sink a lot of time into them because of the kind of game that they are. And, you know, it's not unusual for there to be a lack of RPGs in the first year. But yeah, Tales of Abyss just came out. If the reviews are good, then I will strongly consider that, because I would like to have something I can really sink my teeth into. And I think,
yeah, well, one thing after Xenoblade I'm very excited about is the idea of Monolith doing something on the system.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I played it an awful lot. I mean, it took me months to finish it. I played it for more than 60 hours. But I do feel like if you were playing that portable, there were areas of the game I would have got deeper into. There was always that feeling that, well, I need to make progress with this.
Well, and the ability to save anywhere was a big boost to that.
Yeah, you mean, the way that game was designed, it would have transposed very nicely to a portable. So, I mean, I've got every confidence they could create a very well-crafted portable RPG for 3DS. That's something I'd really like to see.
So, I just want to see more diversity in the library. I want to see more original titles. I mean, I know that's coming, but it's just a matter of waiting it out.
Well, we should mention The sequel to 999 is confirmed for a North American release, so you can't use that because it's already happened, but I'm sure you're really excited about that.
I am ecstatic.
Was it Zero Escape?
That's right. Nobody's getting out alive this time, which if you played all the endings of the original game, is even more confusing than it is if you haven't.
Guillaume?
Well, it's something that Johnny touched on, I think, last episode or two episodes ago, and it's a better flow of Game Boy games that I'd like to see. Unfortunately, I'm not too hopeful either. Like, seeing Metroid released today as the sole virtual console title on the eShop really pissed me off. Because, like, where is Wario Land? Like, I grew up with a Game Boy, so I've got a lot of titles that I'd like to revisit, and I have also got a long list of titles that I've never played before that I'd like to have the opportunity to play for the first time. And I almost feel like the Virtual Console saw some meaty Square RPGs like 5 years after the Wii came out. I don't want that to repeat for the 3DS. Like, I want to play Final Fantasy Adventure. And
hell yes. Brother, yes.
and I almost feel like they should have release those like during the summer when there was nothing else to play, like those big long meaty games.
Well, during the summer they were still cobbling together their strategy and then staging a rescue plan for the entire system.
And there was Link's Awakening DX, which is a long game, and I put a lot of hours into it.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And you know, I mean, Europe is clearly March is the virtual console month over here. I mean, maybe the Nintendo of America will be doing something similar in the summer. Seems as that is the time for digital content, apparently.
Mm. But yeah, like, I just, like, there's so many of these titles that are good, that are worth playing still, I'm sure. Like, I'm not asking for Mortal Kombat 2 Game Boy version to come out. Like,
I own that game.
Mary-Kate and Ashley come into virtual console.
Whoa, John, let's
Game
not
Boy.
Delve into your personal library.
But there are tons of titles that came out after I had like gotten rid of my Game Boy. Like, I never really touched the original Pokemon games or the sequels to Wario Land.
Hey, Pokemon Pinball, you gotta want that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, be still, my heart. Sure.
Yeah, but the only downside is you lose the rumble, which is actually kind of a cool thing about that game.
Yeah, I know.
It is cool, but I can simulate the rumble myself.
John, why don't you take us out as the most recent 3DS owner with your thing that you want from it?
What do you want from your 24 hours with the system?
Well, you know, I'm really looking for Nintendo to kind of bring back some older franchises that perhaps have been sort of, you know, blow the dust off of F-Zero and bring it on here.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Metroid. Some things where, you know, they could really, really...
John wants to see Lock and Chase 3D.
I should guess. Just things where, like, you know, I would like to see them give an older franchise the 3D treatment and do so in a way that really changes it up. Because, I mean, I think, like, Super Mario 3D Land really showed me that, hey, you know, there is this kind of middle ground that they can use to really freshen up a series.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. It was a good discussion. Look back at the first year of the 3DS, and now we're going to close down the show. So first of all, thanks very much to Guillaume for being our guest tonight and filling in.
Thank you for letting me bask in your Skype presence.
By the way, hi, Guillaume.
Hi.
Yes. thanks for Johnny for rushing back and jumping in here at an opportune moment for this big discussion here.
You are very welcome, but now I have a rumbly in my tumbly.
There you go. That is the dedication of which I speak. And so to take us out as quickly as possible, email, I imagine we'll be returning into it next week. The address, of course, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We've certainly got very many worthy letters in recently, but we want more. We're just greedy that way. iTunes, of course. I think we're coming up on 200 ratings on the American store.
Nice.
Which is a nice little milestone, as well as 300 Facebook likes, facebook.com/RadioFreeNintendo, making progress there.
Yeah, and we're only 4 weeks away from the PAX East Live panel, and we do have big plans. Things are a-brewin'.
And not just in Johnny's tummy.
I got mad fingers dipped into pots, man. I'm putting some shit together for this.
Oh, the visuals, the visuals.
Yeah, I'm excited. So I hope some of you are going to be joining us for that.
It's very, very exciting. And don't forget, if you haven't already checked it out, there is the 9th episode of the Famicast with James Charlton, Danny Bivens, and Nintendon himself. So very interesting stuff. Plenty of rhythm games in there. Obviously, it's on our feed, but if you haven't checked that out, it's very much worth doing. And so with that, I'm going to say goodbye for this week, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.